happy Mother's Day to the moms out there. Happy Mother's Day. Mom, I don't think I've said it to you yet this morning, but you'll get your card later. Happy Mother's Day to my mother-in-law, Olivia, as well, at the back. And just want to also say that, you know, as a church, as people in the church, we also recognize that today is a challenging day for many of you, and also want to just express our prayers. And for those of you who've lost moms this last year or in recent times, we know that today can be challenging for those reasons. And also want to acknowledge that there's those that really desire to be moms and haven't been able to biologically or naturally. But I do want to say to you that if you're a woman here today, God has given you a grace to be a mother in so many different ways. And I was thinking myself, there are some people in our lives that I've even talked about from the pulpit at different times who've been like mothers to me, even though they have no children of their own. Single ladies that have spoken in my life, encouraged me, challenged me. And so to all of the mothers today, in whatever form and capacity, we acknowledge you and we honor you this morning. Today, because it's Mother's Day, we're going to do something a little different. I think it's a special morning, and we are going to hear from three moms today. I've given three moms 10 minutes each, and so the challenge will be on them, but they believe they can do it. But I'm going to introduce them to you right now, and they're going to just come up one at a time. And so I'm going to tell you who these moms are. The first mom we're going to hear from is named Renee Heemskerk. And she is currently on maternity leave with her first child. And she's been working for a missions organization called Partners International for almost 11 years. And she is a partnerships manager and oversees partners in 7 different countries around the world. So she has traveled a lot in her time. Her and her husband, Justin, have been involved in our church in a number of ways in recent years. And so we're going to hear from her first. Then we're going to hear from Tanya Foster. Tanya is a mom of 3 adult children and also 1 daughter-in-law. She and her husband, Chris, have been a part of Harvest City Church for 20 years. Tanya leads a life group with Chris. She's part of the leadership of our prophetic ministry. She teaches in Sunday school and I'm sure other things as well. Tanya currently works for the government of Saskatchewan. This is a long title, but she is the Director of Planning, Reporting, and Accountability for the Ministry of Immigration and Career Training. She is also an elected school board trustee in our city. She's going to speak second. And then third today, we're going to hear from Megan Rivas. Megan is a young mom who has grown up in our church. She graduated from our Christian school. And she's one of my former students. I've made her everything that she is today. And she, along with her husband, Justin, have been involved in many different ministries in our church over the years, from leading young adults to life groups to being on the prophetic team. But in recent years, Justin and Megan have pulled back from some of these things. As Justin concentrates on becoming a local celebrity and Megan the celebrity wife. But truthfully, they've been spending a large portion of their time answering this call to foster children. And that has resulted in them adopting 2 children of their own, 2 boys. And by the grace of God, are in the process of adopting a 3rd child, a daughter. And so they have had their hands full, and God has given them real favor in that whole area in our city. Megan, with whatever spare time she has, is also doing some contract work for Brett J. Design. But all 3 of these women are great communicators. They have something to say, and I know you're going to be blessed by them. So let's welcome Renee as she comes this morning to kick it off.
Nice. Joel asked me on a Wednesday to be one of the speakers today. thanks, Tim. Already laughing. And I initially thought he was asking me to speak that Sunday, so that would only give me 3 days to prepare. And so I just panicked, and I thought, oh, I can't do this, 3 days? And, you know, before I typed and politely declined, I called my husband, Justin, and just to see what he thought of it. And when I told him the situation, he paused and slightly confused and reminded me that Mother's Day is actually the following week. So I've been on maternity leave for 10 months now, and this is pretty much how my brain works. I've really lost all sense of time. I think the sleepless nights and the busy days, they kind of all like blur together. And somehow I mixed up the date of my first Mother's Day. But, you know, at least I had a little more time to prepare. And that got me thinking. It's kind of strange. I've been sitting in church, and I've been having this kind of reoccurring analogy come to me throughout the last few services. Justin and I, we joined the gym. Oops. Okay, I'm messing this up here. So Justin and I, we joined the gym a few months ago. And since then, I started seeing a bunch of these connections between, you know, going to the gym and the Christian life. And to be honest, I'm not a very enthusiastic gym goer. The selling feature for me signing up was that they have HGTV and the Food Network at the gym. So that's telling. Needless to say, you won't have to be an avid gym goer to kind of follow along here with what I'm saying. So, you know, when you sign up for the gym, the first thing you do is you go on a tour. So someone takes you around, they show you all of the equipment, they, you know, show you the rooms where the classes are and the change rooms, and you kind of get this whole tour. And from there, there's just this expectation that you start showing up throughout the week and you start using and using the equipment. You know, and if I only show up once a week for an hour, you can imagine I'm not really going to likely see any significant outward change. It would still be good for me. But if my purpose of going to the gym is to see, like, this physical transformation, then likely one day a week is not going to give me that result. And I know this because years ago, I signed up for the gym as well. And I actually had a wedding coming up. It was coming up in about 3 months, and I thought I was living away from my family and there on Ontario. And there's this family wedding, and I thought, man, like, wouldn't it be fun if I like worked out and looked really great for this wedding and like and just was really disciplined. And so I actually did it, and I it took so much effort, you know, and I found that if I wanted to actually see a change, I had to go at least like 5 times a week to get to go there and to like actually participate fully and, you know, really get my life into it. And so, you know, I was thinking about this, and I'm seeing this parallel in our Christian walk. It's like, you know, we can get our church membership. We can attend church on each Sunday, and that's a positive step. It's a positive environment to be in. But ultimately, it's, you know, what we do throughout the week that is going to determine the level of transformation that takes place in our lives. And the purpose of the Christian life, it's not church attendance. It's you know, it's this transformation to happen for us to be transformed into the likeness of Christ. So 2 Corinthians 3:18 says, "And we all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of God, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another, for this comes from the Spirit, from the Lord who is Spirit." Romans 8:29 says, "For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he may be the firstborn among many brothers." So this Christian life is this process of being conformed into the image of the Son, into the image of Jesus. The New Testament letters to the church, they're full of these admonitions, you know, to those who are born again, to put off the old self and to put on the new self. You know, it says, clothe yourself with kindness, compassion, forgive, walk in the way of love, put off greed, anger, slander. You know, so I've been thinking about this in my own life. It's like, what transformation am I seeing in my own life? Am I more kind than I was a year ago? Do I have more freedom in my life today than I had 5 years ago? If I, you know, am I really looking more Christ-like? If I went to the gym consistently for a year, you know, I would expect to be in better physical shape than when I first started. And if I went for 5 years and I didn't see any improvement, you know, I'd really wonder what the point of going would be. And if I told you I've been working out for 10 years, you know, you would expect that there would be some evidence to show that that is true. And in the same way, I've been thinking, you know, if I've been a Christian for over 10 years, you would expect that there, and I would expect there would be a difference from where I started to where I am today. And I've been taking time to kind of think this through. And I've actually been encouraged to look back and see where God has taken me in my life. But, you know, I have to be careful when I'm thinking about transformation, because I can easily kind of manipulate that to just be like improving myself. I just need to improve myself. I just need to do better. I need to be doing this. I have to, you know, read my Bible more. I need to be praying more, and I shouldn't be doing this and getting frustrated about this. And that train of thought just becomes really exhausting. And as a new mom, I've kind of reached new levels of exhaustion. So it's like putting something else onto the to-do list, you know, it just feels defeating. I know I'm not going to get to it. But this week I was listening to a sermon, and it reminded me that we don't become more Christ-like through works. We become more like him by knowing him. As we connect with him and as we spend time with him, you know, we encounter him and we experience his love. And through that, he reveals to us who we really are, kind of what Joel was already saying this morning. You know, we've been made perfect in our spirit, and he sees us that way, and he's calling that out of us. You know, and I just felt that burden lift. You know, it's not about me doing more things. It's just about me knowing him. And I can do that. Like, I can spend time. I can connect with him. And when I read my Bible, I'm not reading it because I should be reading it. I'm reading it because it's helping me to know him. When I'm praying, I'm not praying because there's these things I need to do. I'm praying because to know him, to communicate with him. And my focus becomes being transformed in his presence. And in his presence is rest and peace. And right now, that's a place I feel really drawn to. I believe God is ushering us as a church into this new season. I've really been feeling this. And, you know, we each have our individual calls that we're pursuing. But we also have this, like, unified call as a church. And I just believe if we have any chance of fulfilling that call and this divine purpose, we have to, like, get this foundational piece right. And we have to be a body of people who are intimately connected to Christ. We have to be connected to that source of love in order to become love. And just taking that time to incorporate God into every day and spending time with him. Because it's in his presence that we're transformed. That's it.
Thank you so much, Renee, for challenging us. I hope that I'll challenge you as well. Earlier this year, we received a prophetic word about God wanting to stretch us, both individually and collectively. And I can see how God is doing this in my life, how he's really increasing my scope of influence and my responsibilities and giving me greater challenges. And while I'm witnessing this, I'm also seeing how I have glaring insecurities that are going to sabotage me in my ability to live out this call. I too often have self-esteem issues, I lack confidence, I give in to people-pleasing, and I absolutely hate this part of my life so much. And I don't know if you can relate to that, or maybe you have another bane in your life. Like for you, maybe it's anger, or it's materialism, or lustful thinking, I don't know. But any number of things can work against us as we attempt to yield to the stretching of God. I always like to identify with people in the Bible. So for example, I will imagine that I'm the Apostle John and I'm like laying my head on Jesus' chest. Or I think, you know, I'm David and I'm worshiping God unashamedly. But unfortunately, when it comes to this part of my life, I identify way too much with King Saul. And nobody really wants to be King Saul. Let me just tell you a couple things about King Saul. First of all, the first time we are introduced to King Saul is when he's chosen, well, actually introducing him before he's chosen by God, but it says of him that he is as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel, and he was a head taller than anyone else. So he's pretty impressive, right? But he is so full of insecurity and self-esteem issues, he lacks confidence, all the things I struggle with, that he really does not realize his full potential of the call. In fact, at his coronation, he's hiding behind luggage, and they have to, like, coax him out. This is King Saul. And there are many examples of how his lack of confidence and his people-pleasing sabotage him. But I just want to point out one example in 1 Samuel 15. So in this text, we see how Saul has disobeyed instructions that Samuel had given to him. And then when Samuel came and confronted him, Saul said, "I have sinned. I violated the Lord's command and your instructions. I was afraid of the people, and so I gave in to them. Now I beg you, forgive my sin and come back with me so that I may worship the Lord." So he says, "I was afraid of the men, and so I gave in to them." He pleased the people, not the instruction of God. And then in verse 30, he repeats it again. "I have sinned, but please honor me before the elders of my people and before Israel. Come back with me so that I may worship the Lord your God." And, you know, instead of really repenting of what he'd done, he's more concerned about protecting his reputation with the people and his, you know, what people think of him. And his insecurities continue to unravel in his life, and he ends up so consumed with jealousy of David that he is going to murder him, and God regrets even appointing him to be the king, and on. But I just see so many parallels with this, and I don't want to be like that. I don't want, you know, to get these great opportunities God gives me and to totally blow it because I don't have the confidence or I care too much what people think or I'm scared to offend people. And so it's something that I've been really working on in my life. And I've made a lot of progress, actually, in dealing with these kinds of issues. I've done, you know, a lot of the courses that are offered in the church. I've done the Genesis process and healing shame and healing trauma, all those kinds of things. I've gone for counseling. And a lot of that has dealt with the root issues. But what I have found is once we deal with the root issues, then we have to program our lives to a new set of code. And I feel like God has really given me a tool the past few months to be able to do this. And it's this, that I need to anchor my behaviors and decisions to my values. And I know that sounds, you know, kind of hippy-dippy, but let me explain it. So first of all, I have to credit Brené Brown because this sort of philosophy comes out of lots of her books, but in particular, Dare to Lead. And so in this book, she references an analogy that Theodore Roosevelt proposed in a speech. So I'm going to read it. It's a little long, and I'm not going to unpack it greatly. So you can, you know, go back and process it, hopefully, in your own time. So this is what he said. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of victory, of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. So Brené Brown, she talks about the arena as a metaphor for anything important we're doing in our lives. So it could be, you know, a job. It could be, some like ministry, something you believe in. It could be marriage. It could be parenting. Anything that you're doing that you consider to be important, that's going into the arena. And she says it's your values that bring you into the arena. So for example, maybe you value helping people, and then you go into a profession like teaching or social work or something to be able to help people. Maybe you value friendship, so you invest a lot of energy and time into building relationships. But this is a thing. Once we're in the arena, whether it's the job, the relationship, whatever, and we're getting our butts kicked, we're discouraged, we're not seeing change, the haters are shouting at us, the critics and cynics are coming out of the woodwork. And in that time, we need to have the clarity of values so that we do not quit. Values are like the North Star. They guide us in times of darkness. Or they're like an anchor that keeps us grounded. And I really think it's imperative that we understand what our values are and how these shape our decisions. You know, I could have spouted off a few things and said they were my values, but I didn't really know what they meant and how they worked in my life. So I spent time kind of processing this, thinking about this, and I landed on two things that I hold the most sacred in my life, and they are faith and growing. So these are a couple of behaviors that support my faith value. I want to be more like Jesus, so I approach difficulties and pain as opportunities to grow more like him. I want to live my life so that people always see Jesus in me, like the selfless, loving Jesus. And then my growth value looks like this. I invest in learning opportunities because it's important for me to have knowledge and understanding. And this is a big one. I push past fear and insecurity because I want to do everything I've been called to do and become everything I have been called to become. Now, I could share all of the behaviors that contradict those values, because I'm not doing this all the time, just so you know. But this is what I aspire to be doing, and this is how I want these values to shape everything I do. So I'm going to give you one example of how this works in my life. Okay, there are people who don't like me. I don't know why. I'm likable. But they would love to see me fail. They would try to discredit me. They try to sabotage me. And my tactic for dealing with these people has been to retreat and do everything I can to avoid them. I would have serious anxiety bouts, worrying about what they think, what they're going to do to me. I'd even quit doing things because I didn't want to run into them. And as I said, I've dealt with a lot of the root issues, but now it's time for me to kind of break that flight, fright impulse within me and to have courage to confront these uncomfortable situations. So this is what I've been doing. I've been anchoring myself to my values. I'm like, no, this is not who I am. I do not run away from difficult things. My value says I push past fear and insecurity to become who God wants me to come. I admit I'm usually trembling with fear during this, taking many deep breaths, practicing. But I'm like, no, I am going to live out the values that I hold sacred because that is who God's called me to do, right? Live a life worthy of the calling we have received. And I want to live that life that is worthy of that. And I have actually, in the past few months, confronted two people for disparaging me. That was terrifying. I've refused to back out of a project because people were trying to force me out of it. I'm like, nope, I'm in it. Nope. And this is really courageous work, and I am only beginning to battle this because I have a long way to go. But anchoring myself to my values has been very effective, and I'm hopeful that I'm going to continue to reprogram my brain so that I don't resort to the fright-flight reflexes, as I said. I want to have the resilience and wholeness and integrity to yield to the stretching of God. I don't want to be King Saul, totally destroyed because of insecurities. And I hope that I've encouraged you that you don't have to be a victim to self-destructive attitudes and behaviors, because I want to see each of us stand up and let God stretch us and see what he can do. So now I'm going to turn it over to the third installment of our trilogy, Megan.
Awesome. Thank you. Before we start, or before I start, I just want to take a second and just honor our Indigenous people and just to recognize that we're gathered on Treaty 4 territory today. That's just an important point. Because it's Mother's Day, I just thought that I would end our service with just a testimony of a bit of my journey of motherhood. And when I was 18, Joel had mentioned that I graduated from the academy here. And one of the things that they would do is, because graduation was a bit of a milestone in our lives, is they would bring some people from the prophetic team in just to prophesy over the graduates and just hear what God has to say. And one of the people who was prophesying over me was actually Pastor Dave. And I don't even know if he remembers this, but I remember him starting and saying, I wouldn't just give this word to anybody, but because you have the maturity, I think you can handle it. And you're like, okay, what are you going to say? And he actually spoke out of this passage, which is Psalm 84, verses 5 to 7. And this is what the verses say. What joy for those whose strength comes from the Lord, who have set their minds on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. When they walk through the valley of weeping, it will become a place of refreshing springs. The autumn rains will clothe it with blessings. They will continue to grow stronger, and each of them will appear before God in Jerusalem. And his whole word was actually that throughout my life, I would go through some real hardships, but to take heart, to take courage, because God was going to teach me how to turn those valleys of weeping into refreshing springs. Now, being 18, hardships were not really on my radar. My whole goal in my life was that I was going to marry the love of my life, have children, be a stay-at-home mom, and work for the church. Like, what could go wrong in that plan? What I didn't realize was that within a couple years, I would marry the love of my life, who, ironically, was also my arch nemesis in high school, but that is a different story for another time. And that after a couple years of being married, when we felt like it was time to start a family, that we would actually enter into a journey of infertility that would go on for 10 and counting years. And anybody who has walked through that kind of loss, you know that even valley of weeping isn't even suffice to describe it, right? Valley of despair, valley of hopelessness, valley of anger. And for me, it wasn't just that I wasn't able to have kids. It was my whole future, my whole dream, my whole vision. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And there was a period of real anger with God. But there came a point, especially in those first few years, where there was so much pain that I remember having to make a very conscious decision that I would posture myself in a place of surrender and say, okay, God, I don't understand what you're doing, and this is so painful, but I choose to trust you, and I choose to believe that you are faithful. And it was actually out of that place of surrender that eventually God spoke to my husband and I to become foster parents.
And we didn't even really know other foster parents at that time, so we just kind of jumped in. And the whole goal of fostering is for reunification, right? It's that you as foster parents would create a safe and loving home for these kids while everybody works as a team to have this family and these parents reunified. But out of intergenerational trauma, right, and cycles of addiction and pain, even though that's always the goal, that doesn't always happen. And so I have a picture of my family up here. You'll see I've got two beautiful boys and one daughter here. And so our journey with fostering has looked a little bit different. In the past 7 years, we've actually only had 5 kids throughout our home, and 3 of them are still with us. And our 2 boys are adopted, and our daughter there, whose face has to be blanked out, we're just in the final processes of adoption, and so I have to keep that pretty confidential for now. But when I look through the last 7 years, right, of even fostering, like I know that I have this incredible and phenomenal family that came out of that valley of weeping. But it wasn't easy. And in this past 7 years, there has continued to be many valleys of weeping. Because anybody who knows that when you're dealing with people who have a lot of pain and hurt and addictions, and you're also dealing with a system who is meant to protect these kids but is very broken in and of itself, right? And so there's been many times where I've had to take that same posture of surrender, of God, I don't know what you're doing, and I don't know what the outcome is, but I believe that you're faithful. And another way to say how God can turn our valleys of weeping into refreshing springs is that what the enemy was making for evil, God turns into good. And that's his heart, is to be redemptive. And we have seen that in our kids' stories over and over and over again. When the enemy came in to steal, kill, and destroy, God came to bring life and life to the fullest. And our middle one, Nesta, he's 3.5, and we got him right out of the hospital when he was 2 days old. And right away, we had this beautiful baby boy that we loved with all our hearts. And it's always this tension with being foster parents, because you love these kids as your own, but at the same time, you are advocating for their parents and being a place of support and speaking encouragement into them that they would become all who they're supposed to be so that family can be reunified. But after a time, that wasn't happening, and the courts decided when our son was 1.5 years that he would go permanent, which put him up for adoption. Now, we had built a very close relationship with our son's family, with his siblings. We would see them on a regular basis, and so we did not want to see our son just move to a new adoptive home and start over, but we ran into a lot of policies, and we were told that we would not be able to adopt him, and that within another year, we would be saying goodbye to him at 2.5 after raising him from birth. We're not animals, we're not inhuman, where we love hard, we break hard. And so it really is the grief of losing a child when we have to say goodbye. And I remember having to work with the workers in making a binder that was going to go to the new adoptive family and having to write things about my son to explain what an amazing little boy he was, knowing the whole time that I would have to say goodbye, or to pick out a picture of him so that when they opened it, they would fall in love just like we had, right? And in that valley of weeping, again, here it is again, and we didn't know what was going to happen, but we just came in a posture of, God, I trust you. This isn't looking at all what I think is best or how I'd like it to look, but you're faithful because I've seen it. And what ended up happening was that his birth parents, who we'd built a relationship, when they heard that he was going to be adopted to another family, they actually began to fight for us to be able to adopt him. And they wrote letters to the ministry, and they went in for meetings, and they got significant people involved that actually changed the ministry's mind that we would be able to adopt him. And honestly, I don't think in my life I'll ever encounter anything more humbling or honoring than having a birth mother who you you know loves her child with all her heart advocate for you to be the one to raise him, right? But what is so amazing that came out of that situation is our bond and our connection with this family. We didn't just gain a son, we gained a whole family. And they've even changed our whole perspective on fostering, where before we were just a main support for these kids, but now actually we've become a main support for the birth families. And it's just another area of impact for us, where if I could go back to that girl 10 years ago who was in the midst of heartbreak and hopelessness and pain, if I could go back to her and say, listen to me, your God is faithful. You don't see it now, but there's going to come a day where you are going to have such a beautiful family that every day they will remind you that God is faithful. That through their lives, their other lives are going to be impacted, and you're actually going to have more purpose than you know what to do with, which is exactly what has happened, right? And so if I just want to leave you just with an encouragement this morning, that if you're walking through a valley of weeping, right, or if your life is turning out different than you think it would, anchor into the Father. Anchor into the Father and trust him and know that he's faithful. And out of that place of surrender, even without understanding, that's where he can take those valleys of weeping and turning them into refreshing springs. And I'm not just preaching a fluffy gospel here where it means everything is going to, just because you love Jesus, everything's going to turn out great, right? Good doesn't mean easy. The life of the kingdom is not comfortable. Right? But it means when we can come in a place of surrender in the midst of that, he can turn those valleys into refreshing springs while you're walking through it. We're doing a series right now on growth in the church, right? There is an intimacy that comes, a refreshing spring that comes out of that pain that you can't get anywhere else. Right? There is a maturity and there is a strength that comes when, in spite of circumstances, we can say, God, you're faithful. And so this morning, if you need encouragement, just look at my babies. Right? Look and just know that even in the midst of real pain and heartache, when you can trust God, he's faithful.
Wow, they did good, hey? Should have given them longer than 10 minutes each. Who knew you'd actually stick to the time? Are you encouraged this morning? Why don't we just stand to our feet today? We've been challenged. God wants us to grow. Growth is found by daily coming into the presence of Jesus and seeing who he is and being changed by his presence and by his glory. Working out once a week isn't going to cut it if we want to be who God has called us to be. We've been challenged to ask ourselves, what are those values in our lives? And to anchor our lives on those values and to have the courage to say, this is who I am. I'm going to stand by these things. We've been inspired that God can take those painful things in our lives, those places of weeping, and turn them into springs of joy. I'm going to continue that thought next week as we continue our series on growing pains and looking at the pains of growth. But this morning, why don't we just bow our heads and just respond in our own hearts to those areas that God has challenged us with this morning. Father, I thank you for these three amazing ladies, these moms that are serving you and in different capacities, but Lord, having impact in different ways. And God, we've been blessed and encouraged by them this morning. Father, I pray today that we would be challenged throughout this week. What am I doing today to get into the presence of Jesus, to know my God, to be transformed by him? Lord, I pray that you would speak to us. What are those things in our lives that we value the most? Are we truly living by what we say is important to us? And help us, oh God, to identify that and to have the courage to do what we need to do. Father, I pray for those today that are in the midst of that valley of weeping. Father, where it may seem like there's no way out, that are feeling dark and alone and hopeless. Father, I thank you today that through Megan's testimony and the testimony of her children, we've seen that God, even in those places of despair and hope and hopelessness, you have something amazing that you can do in us and want to do in us. God, I thank you that even in the presence of our enemies, you prepare a table for us, a feast for us. I thank you that goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our lives, oh God. Father, I thank you that you're pursuing us in those places. Father, I thank you that when we're weak, you're strong, oh God. And so, Lord, today, I just particularly want to pray for those moms today. Lord, I feel in my heart led to pray for those single moms today, Lord, that are struggling. Father, I pray that your grace would be sufficient for them. I pray that your power, Lord, would be known to them in their places of weakness. Father, I pray today for those that are weeping because of pain in regards to things in their own families and maybe don't even have the kinds of mothers that they want or they've lost a mom or whatever. God, today I pray that you would minister into those places of hurt and those places of need and bring real joy and hope and peace today. Father, we just thank you for all that you've done in our service this morning. Thank you for speaking to us and challenging us. We worship you today in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.